It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to the Million Pound Radio Show Millennium Special. Now, a lot of people have asked us, why do this show almost 4 years early? Well, it's because independent research has shown that by the year 1999... the very mention of the word millennium will be enough to put listeners into a life-threatening coma.
So this is our early contribution to the global celebrations that will be taking place in the year 2000. Of course, due to different calendars, not all the world will be joining in the festivities. For instance, in Ethiopia, it will only be 1993.
Mm-hmm. And in Nepal, it will be 2027.
And, of course, it'll be 1958 in Wales.
Mm. Yes. But first, we have what, by any standards, has to be an astonishing world exclusive. Because in the studio tonight, together, at the same time, we have His Royal Highness Prince Charles and Her Royal Highness the Princess of Wales. Your Majesty, welcome.
Good evening.
Your Highness, welcome.
Hello.
And thank you very much for coming here tonight. Nick, bang their heads together.
Right.
Now just shut up. The pair of you. All right, we're fed up with it. Nicely done, by the way, Nick.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, I think we spoke for the nation there, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I tell you what, there's one thing that does puzzle me about all this Princess Diana business.
Yeah?
Well, she had an affair with that James Hewitt bloke, right?
Yeah.
And, well, you know, she's a princess of enormous charm and beauty, and he's a moron.
Well, the sad truth is, some morons are strangely attractive to women.
Ah.
Only some, though, Nick, so don't get your hopes up. Now, in accordance with BBC internal memo number 649/2F314891/C...
Was that the one about reducing bureaucracy?
No. This was the one all about BBC programmes fulfilling a commitment to niche broadcasting.
I still don't quite understand that niche broadcasting thing.
Oh, it's quite simple, right? Instead of making something that appeals to everyone, right, you make shows which appeal to particular segments of your audience. Mm. You have a programme like Screaming Reels, which is aimed specifically at anglers, or the Food Programme, which is aimed at cooking enthusiasts, or Top Gear, which is aimed at sad people.
So we have to aim our show at separate segments of the potential audience.
That's right, yeah. Starting with our sports fans, and this is for you.
Radio Live Sport.
Welcome to Radio Live Sport, and instantly we go over, live this very instant, to the dressing room of the England cricket team in Rawalpindi, where Ray Illingworth is giving his team talk.
All right, lads. We've had a bad run of results. There's no getting away from that. But I think it all comes down to a question of the right mental attitude. So let's just knuckle down, go through a few basic, important points on a player-by-player basis, OK? Right, let's start with the batting. Now, where's Graham Ick? Icky?
Yes, boss.
You're crap. All right, I know you score the odd century, but when it comes to the big crunch matches, you just go to pieces, don't you, son? Eh? God knows why. I mean, what's the last thing I always say to you just before you go out for an important innings?
You say, for God's sake, don't go out there and go to pieces, you big Zimbabwean sissy.
Exactly.
This is just typical. You've never got an encouraging word for anyone.
No, that's not true. Hey, Thorpey, tell Athers what I did yesterday.
You took me to one side and told me not to worry about my form.
That's right.
You said to hold my head up high. I had every right to be in the side.
There.
That I was no more crap than any of the other tossers.
I'll rest my case. Now then, Alec, you're crap. Neil, you're crap. Darren, you're from Yorkshire, so you're okay. Dominic, you're the all-rounder. You're crap at everything.
Oh, for goodness sake!
Look, it's not my fault if you can't take a bit of Yorkshire blunt speaking. Now, I'd like to talk to our bowlers, in inverted commas. Where the hell's Devon Malkin? Oh, aye, minced off in a girly off, didn't he? I don't know.
Listen, Ray, we are sick and tired of you telling us we're crap, OK? It's not right for you to do that. It's not our fault we're crap.
No, we do our best.
I blame the system.
All right, calm down. Now, listen. That's the umpires coming out, so off we go, all right? Let's give it 100%, all right, lads? And leave your Valium in the dressing room. Oh, Athers, come here, lad. Come on, let's hear that team motto. Come on, let's hear it.
Let's get out there, get stuck in, and try and limit the humiliation.
That's the spirit. Bit of leadership. Good luck now, lads. I don't know. There's something going wrong. If only I could put my finger on it.
Welcome back to our Millennium Special.
First, some traffic news. The first cyclist who touches me because they're riding on the pavement will be dead.
That's not actually a joke, is it, Nick?
No, Andy, it's a warning.
Actually, things can be just as traumatic on the tube, you know. I had this really upsetting journey in the other day, really traumatic. I was waiting for my train at the end of the platform, you know, when I noticed this poor woman.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Excuse me. Are you upset about something? Well, look, perhaps you'd just like to step back from the edge of the platform a little bit.
No!
Come on. You don't want to do anything silly.
Don't I? I've lost everything. My family, my job. I'm totally alone. And inside of me is this black hole.
Look, I know when you're desperate, it's very hard to see beyond that. But please, you mustn't do this terrible thing.
Why not?
Well, there's a very good reason why not. Because if you take your own life now and throw yourself under the train, you'll make me late for work. You'll make me late for work, and then I'll miss my 10 o'clock meeting.
What?
I know, a meeting doesn't sound that important, but it's with a film company, actually. They're thinking of commissioning my script. It's a slasher movie, but the murderer talks about Kierkegaard, so it's actually quite deep.
Look, I'm in total despair.
I accept that. All I'm saying is that perhaps you could give in to despair on your own time, that's all.
Look, I just can't take any more, so just leave me alone.
Lots of buses go past outside. big heavy ones get up quite a speed, some of them.
You are so selfish.
Oh, I'm selfish. Miss Bring London to a Grinding Halt says I'm selfish.
You don't understand. I'm overwhelmed by a sense of futility and hopelessness.
Well, of course you are. This is the Northern Line. Get that woman. Oh, dear.
Is she okay? Is she not going to jump, is she?
Yes, I am.
Brilliant. That means I'll get to miss that staff training session. They're so boring.
What's going on?
She's going to jump.
Oh, perfect. Gets me out of that strategy seminar.
Just let me be, all of you. I'm going to do it.
That's it. Go on, girl.
Close your eyes and after three.
Oh, no, you don't. No.
Hey, what's happening here? You've got to step back from the edge of the platform, miss.
Who are you?
I'm a London Regional Transport Supervisor.
Oh, thank goodness. Now, look, she's trying to kill herself.
Is she not? Well, you mustn't do it here, miss.
Quite right.
You want the other end of the platform. The train will be coming in a lot faster then.
What?
Try and aim for the shiny rail.
Don't tell her that. What the hell do you think you're doing?
Well, the way I see it, we don't have the right to stop her. If a human being is so broken on the wheel of life, then surely they have the right to put an end to their suffering, you know?
Oh, I get it. You get a week off if you see her jump, don't you?
I might do.
Ah.
Well, you need time to get over the trauma. You have to get away from it all, you know?
Yes, I'll probably need a week off work as well. I'll be very traumatised.
Yeah, and me. I'll be traumatised.
So go on, go. You can do it.
This is scandalous.
Right. I'm going to jump. I am. I'm finally going to do it. And no one's going to stop me.
London Transport regrets that the Northern Line service is suspended due to a person under a train at Charing Cross.
Oh, the selfish bastard! And now, as a further part of our commitment to niche broadcasting, we present...
Parent Radio!
Don't do that.
Yes. Parent Radio, the station aimed at people who have little people. Later, we'll be looking at the latest drug detector that you can use to spy on your kids.
What's that, then?
Well, you can pass it over your kids' clothes and it detects drugs, you know.
That's a good idea.
Yes, it is.
You know, I mean, if you've forgotten where you left your stash, it's like...
Nick, you poor damaged person. Drugs are not...
Oh, come on, Andy, don't lecture me. Attitudes are relaxing towards drugs. Are they even allowed to be advertised now, you know?
What are you talking about?
It's true. When we went to the cinema the other night, there was this big, long, glossy advertisement for heroin.
That was train spotting. Honestly. Back to Parent Radio.
Parent Radio.
Don't do that.
And now on Parent Radio, we go over live to the World Getting Out of the Front Door Championships.
And you join us as we watch live by satellite hookup the Jenkins family in Abingdon and the Hassler family in Cologne, Germany. The families evenly matched, both with three children under the age of 5 years. And the good news for Britain is that the Jenkins family have managed to get dressed and are nearly out of the door, all five of them, in the phenomenally fast time of 3 hours and 11 minutes. And they're very close to that magical moment of actually getting out of the front door. They're well ahead of the German family, who are, of course, handicapped by the parents' choice of lederhosen for their children. Mr. Jenkins has got his hand on the door latch. This could be gold for Britain. There's just 3-year-old Oliver to go. They've done it, surely. Mrs. Jenkins is just buttoning up her jacket. And she's taken her eye off little Oliver for a moment there. Oh, no, he's heading for the dressing up box. And Mrs. Jenkins has spotted it now. She's rushing across to little Oliver to intercept, but he's shaking his head. He's adamant. And, oh, no, this is dreadful. She is reasoning with him. She is trying to reason with a 3-year-old, Alan.
Well, frankly, I just can't believe that someone of her experience... gonna make a basic mistake like that. Unbelievable.
Mr. Jenkins is getting involved now then. He's trying the we'll leave you behind ploy. This is desperate stuff, isn't it, Alan?
Desperate at this level. Never gonna work.
No.
Meanwhile, in Cologne, we can see the Hassler family about to make it out the front door.
And the door is open and they are out. It's goal for Germany. Britain now lagging way behind. Yes, the other two kids have got out the modelling clay and it's another case. But so near yet so far for Britain, and with Mr. and Mrs. Jenkins weeping in the hallway, I hand you back to Andy and Nick.
Well, welcome back to the Million Pound Radio Show Millennium Special.
Nick, what do you think of my haircut?
Well, it's a haircut.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah. I don't think I'll go to that hairdresser's again, you know, I don't think they're very good. I mean, answer me this, right? When you sit down for your haircut, is it normal for the barber to ask you if you want gas? Most hairdressers have pictures of male models with fashionable hairstyles on the wall, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, this place has got Bobby Charlton and Arthur Scargill. And the bloke, he even cut a little bit off my ear by mistake, you know? And then he cut some off the other ear to even it up. I mean, it looks dreadful. I feel all self-conscious now as
Andy,
well.
Andy, relax, mate. It doesn't matter. There's no point someone worrying about their appearance.
True.
Especially in your case.
Well, you worry about your appearance.
No, Andy, I'm quite comfortable with the way I look.
Oh, yeah. Well, then why have you had that nose job?
I have not had a nose job.
Yes, you have.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Nick, you have definitely had something done, because the last time we did this show, I remember your nose threw a shadow over the front 6 rows. See? And now it's only the first 3, see?
So what have I had? What's the crime there, huh?
Well, because you should be happy with what Mother Nature gave you, that's why. And okay, even if she has given you a hoot of the size of a planet... You should look on the bright side and say, all right, well, it's a bit big, but it's great for smelling flowers or raiding ants' nests. You shouldn't give in to vanity.
Oh, I'm vain, am I? Mm-hmm. This from the man who flew to Beverly Hills and paid a small fortune to have his neck lengthened.
That was not a cosmetic operation, actually, Nick. It was decided that there was a valid clinical need because I could never see anything in cinemas.
But it didn't quite work out the way you'd hoped, did it?
No, it was a disappointment.
And why was it a disappointment?
It's a very boring story. I don't think anyone here is interested.
It was a disappointment because they extended your neck by adding 3 vertebrae taken from a dog, which means although you can now see more easily in cinemas, you also urinate over anything you feel is your territory.
Nick.
Mind you, you always used to do a bit of that, actually.
Earlier this week, we sent Cyrano, sorry, Nick, out to investigate the plans for the big Millennium Party.
Well, of course, when the Millennium celebrations come around, they will be centred here, in Greenwich, because I'm standing on the waste ground, which will be transformed into a huge Millennium exhibition costing £200 million. And with me, I have Piers Thompson. Now, Piers, you're part of the committee planning the celebrations. A lot of people are worried about the danger of commercialisation.
Well, of course, we're very conscious of that, but we will ensure that there is no cheapening or debasement of the McDonald's Millennium.
Yes, yeah. I understand it was a very close thing between here and Birmingham.
It's impossible to have a close thing between anywhere and Birmingham.
Now, we also have with us today a local resident, Reg Trevitt. Now, Reg, do you think this money would be better spent, say, tackling the air pollution problem in Greenwich, which is the worst in the country?
Well, Nick, I... Excuse me, sorry. Well, I...
I think we'll take that as a yes. Well, now, if I can turn to Virginia Bottomley. Virginia, thank you for coming along, even though you weren't invited.
While I'm here, I might as well tell you that this Millennium Exhibition is good news for Greenwich, good news for London, good news for Europe, great news for the universe.
Yes, if we could just concentrate on specifics.
And it's wonderful news on the specifics, because on this site will be built 12 superb high-tech pavilions representing the 12 circles of time.
Now, that's not a concept of time I'm familiar with. I don't recall any of Einstein's laws stating that time is composed of a dozen circles.
No, well, we didn't get it from Einstein.
No? Where did you get it from?
Well, I think it's from The Lion King, actually. The good news is that this contaminated site, full of cyanides and hydrocarbons and other nasties, is going to be completely cleaned up by British Gas.
Oh, that's brilliant. Who made the site so polluted?
Well, it was British Gas.
Oh, I see, and they're paying to clean it all up. Marvellous.
Oh, you are funny. No, the taxpayer pays for the clean-up, obviously. Otherwise, British Gas have no incentive.
Well, I suppose if it's land that no one wants, then...
Exactly. No one wants it. Well, apart from British Gas. They're building luxurious flats here when the exhibition is over.
Won't the land be worth a lot more, then? Like, after the clean-up that we've all paid for?
You just have to nitpick, don't you? We can't be left behind, man. The US, France, Japan, they're all planning huge, highly commercial projects.
So you're saying we intend to beat our world competitors?
That's right. So much so, in fact, that we're going to undercut them by staging our millennium in 1997.
1997?
Yes, we're fast-tracking the year 2000. Just in time for the election, in fact, should generate enough feel-good factor to swing it for us. Especially when we give everyone a £1,000 millennium voucher to spend.
Yeah, but the electorate aren't going to fall for something as obvious as that, are they? I'm sorry, I don't know why I said that. Thank you very much, Virginia Bottomley.
Later, Paula Yates will be here telling us about how she's fighting her addiction by joining a self-help group, Attention Seekers Anonymous. She'll be telling us how they meet every Tuesday, naked in Trafalgar Square.
And we'll be looking at the 5,000-year-old fossilised man who was found in the front row at a Cliff Richard concert.
First, an exclusive, a secret recording sent to us anonymously by Tony Benn from the inner sanctum of the Labour Party. Look out. Here comes Mandelson.
He's late.
Probably same reason as last time. Started addressing the 1922 committee. It was half hour before anyone noticed he was addressing the wrong party.
All right, everybody. I call this meeting of the Labour Party Strategy Committee to order.
But, Peter, I thought Tony was chairing this meeting.
Mr. Blair got called away on important business. A photo opportunity came up at short notice with Oasis.
Oh, not again.
Now, all our most recent research shows that we need to increase our appeal amongst the low-earning C's and D's. Our marketing hotshots have recently come up with a rather catchy, clever name for them. The working class. Quite neat, isn't it?
But to me...
Shut up, Prescott. Now,
Apparently, these working class, a lot of them are in trade unions, and we feel there might be some votes for us there, provided our clean-cut image doesn't put them off. So, Harriet, your son, where does he go to school?
Well, he's at a grammar school in Dulwich, actually.
Not anymore. He's been moved to a remedial class in a Toxteth Comprehensive. It's all been sorted. You'll be able to see him at weekends. Now, Jack Straw, your son.
Studying at the bar.
Wrong. Unemployed and living on the worst housing estate in Middlesbrough with 8 Rottweilers and a glue-sniffing habit. Excellent street credibility quotient. Now, Prescott.
You don't need to foist any false credentials on me. I am working class.
Yes, I know. I've been reading your file. You kept that quiet, didn't you?
This is ridiculous. Politics is about policies.
Oh, yeah? Look at the stats, baby. We launched the stakeholder economy. We slip in the opinion polls. Tony Blair heads a ball with Kevin Keegan. We gain 6 points. Which reminds me, these are the lists of which football team you support.
No, no, but I don't like football.
You do now, Harriet. You've got a season ticket for Rotherham. Oh, stop moaning, you silly old cow.
How dare you use such sexist language to me?
Because it goes down well up north, so shut up and make us all a cup of tea.
You like this? Oh! I'm sorry, I lost it. I didn't mean to punch you.
No, no, that was great. Just make sure you do it next time in front of the cameras with a can of special brew in the other hand and we're really cooking. Right, David Blunkett.
Yes?
We've changed your guide dog. Swap the Labrador for a pit bull.
Oh. I really object to this caricature of the working class you're working off.
Oh, shut up and put this ferret in your top pocket. Now, come on. Get your shell suits on. There's a photo call in 20 minutes at the Arndale Centre.
Bloody hell.
And remember, first one to swear at their kids wins a free satellite dish.
Welcome back. And now another bit of niche broadcasting. This is the discussion slot for our over 60s listeners. And my first guests are Elsie and Hetty Bradstock. Welcome, ladies. Now, you're twins.
That's right, twins.
Twins, yes.
And how old are you?
I'm 81 and she's 76.
How can there be 5 years between you if you're twins?
It was a very difficult labour.
I see. Right. Now, we also have in the studio the Right Honourable Peter Lilly, MP. Please, no throwing things. Who's in charge of social services, of course, and therefore the minister responsible for the elderly.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Well, the Cabinet Office has instructed us not to use that title, you know, the minister responsible for, on the grounds that it implies some sort of responsibility.
Oh, right. Well, how can I describe you, then?
As the minister loosely associated with the elderly.
Isn't that a bit vague?
Yes.
Right. Well, I see. Well, I thought we'd kick off with the topic of the Millennium celebrations, because we've not really heard the views of the elderly on this. So, Elsie and Hetty, how do you think we should celebrate the new century?
Well, we think the celebration should be a joyous evocation of our history. Just like those marvellous V-Day celebrations.
Oh, yeah. So you thought that was a fitting commemoration?
Oh, my word, yes. That was just like stepping back 50 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We danced to Vera Lynn songs.
Ate bully beef and spam.
Yeah.
And painted fake stocking scenes with gravy down the back of our legs.
Yeah.
And in the evening, tell them what we did.
We went out and shagged some Americans.
Lovely.
Yeah. Right, so basically you think the Millennial celebration should be the same sort of commemorative pageant?
Oh, yes, very much so.
My one was enormous.
Yes, thank you.
Like a stallion.
Yes, thank you. Just hold on a second. Now, turning back to you, Peter Lilly, don't you think older citizens should be consulted about what form these celebrations take? After all, over 60s make up nearly 20% of our population.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
You don't sound too delighted about that statistic.
Well, no, I'm not. You see, the point is...
Yeah, I know you. You're that minister.
Yes. You see, the point is...
I like.
Thank you. You see, the point is...
I like you because you remind me of Liberace. I don't know why.
The point is, we are becoming increasingly overrun by older people, all using up resources and wanting things.
Yes, but I mean the elderly are the government's responsibility, aren't they?
Ah, no, you're factually wrong there. Citizens over 60 are not the responsibility of this government. They were nearly all conceived under the governments of Baldwin and Ramsay MacDonald. Those governments bear the responsibility for these people.
Oh, come on, this is...
I've got the figures here. 38% born during Ramsay MacDonald's government, 51% born during Baldwin's term of office, and 11% conceived under Lloyd George.
What, Lloyd George's government?
No, just under Lloyd George.
So clearly, Minister, you feel no responsibility towards the elderly. But someone who does, I'm pleased to say, is Simon Dexter. Now, Simon, you are a charity worker.
That's right. I work full-time for Help the Aged.
And what is it you do exactly for Help the Aged?
I'm an assassin.
an assassin? You mean a...
A hitman, yes.
Mm. Now, what exactly prompted Help the Aged to employ a hitman?
Well, the charity did some research which showed that despite numerous campaigns to increase public awareness, etc., there still remained a fundamental indifference towards the plight of the elderly. So it was decided to adopt a more assertive approach.
Mm. So basically, your job is to identify people who are failing to respond to the needs of the elderly...
And then take them out, yes.
Mm. Mm, I see. Have you met Peter Lilly? Oh, wait. Oh, seems to have gone. Now, Simon, just give us some examples of the work you do.
Well, for instance, there was a head of a privatised water company that was cutting off the supply of pensioners who got behind with their bills. Mm. So I paid him a visit and, well, let's just say I don't expect the other water companies will be cutting off any pensioners from now on.
Mm. Do you think perhaps sticking his head on a pole in the middle of one of his reservoirs was a little extreme? On second thoughts, maybe not, no. It was the head of a water company, after all. Thank you. Thank you for coming in, Simon.
Actually, Andy, does he do requests? Only I've got a list.
Yeah, not now, Nick, right?
It's alphabetical. It's only 12 pages.
But I said not now. All right.
All right, blimey, you're in a rush, Strop.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a bit short on the old shut-eye, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me and Libby had a bit of a row. And anyway, the upshot is that I'm currently sleeping in the spare room at the top.
Didn't know your house had a spare room at the top.
Well, Libby calls it the spare room at the top. You or I would call it the roof.
You're sleeping on the roof?
Yeah, it's not that bad, actually. Nice and airy. Mm. Cleared the old sinuses out, you know, but it's just a bit awkward.
When you roll over?
And over and over, yeah. I mean, it's not so bad since I positioned the wheelie bins to break my fall, yeah. But, you know.
What was the row about?
Well, this old schoolmate of mine turned up. Real character. Tim Westlake. You've met him.
Is he the big guy with the scar who can fart the theme tune to Bonanza?
Yeah, that's it.
Got thrown out of the SAS for being too aggressive.
That's the one.
Used to drink Domestos with a lager top and once threw you through the window of the Lemon Flag for a bet.
Yeah, old Tim. Great laugh. Mind he's had to calm down a bit since they made him bishop. But, Anyway, Tim and I go out for a few bevvies. Well, quite a lot of bevvies, actually. And I don't get on till 6 a.m, and unfortunately, rather than just tell Libby that I'd been out drinking, I told her I'd been up the hospital all night donating a kidney.
That one never works. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, they just seem to see straight through it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Well, there's a letter on its way to her explaining everything.
That's going to be a bit of an incriminating document, isn't it?
No, it's okay, because I've got Lord Justice Scott to write it. Yeah. And he concluded that although I deliberately misled her, there was no intention to knowingly mislead her, and therefore I can be absolved of any designedly duplicitous intent, you know. Or as he put it, I was not unaware of my un-somethingness.
Well, I thought all that Scott thing was a total disgrace, frankly.
Really?
I don't see why the opposition just didn't get up and say the government was a bunch of liars, you know.
Because they can't do it. That would be unparliamentary language, you see. I mean, MPs can't just point the finger and accuse other MPs of lying.
Why not?
Well, because otherwise they'd be there all day, wouldn't they? I mean... And now, as the new millennium gallops towards us, we look back at the edited highlights of the past 1,000 years. The year is 1000 AD. Europe is in the throes of the Dark Ages. Blighted by ignorance and fear, mankind views the dawn of a new millennium with foreboding. Everywhere, people see grim portents of the future.
I tell you, I saw it with my own eyes. A star with a fiery tail burning its way across the night sky.
And I saw a horse eating its young.
Aye, and ravens were circling above the decaying body of a witch.
And I saw a nun give birth to a deformed hedgehog. And I tell you, that's the last time I mix brandy with cider.
For the next few centuries, man continued to be enslaved by his ignorance. Storms meant that the gods were angry. If harvests failed, the gods were angry. When floods came, the gods were angry. Nobody questioned whether the gods should perhaps sit down and address this anger.
Nature seemed mysterious and hostile. Virulent plagues could destroy entire towns. Nowadays, of course, no community can be wiped out by disease, only by out-of-town shopping centres.
But the most brilliant star of reason shone in Italy.
Galileo, you know why you have been summoned before this Inquisition?
I meant no impiety, Your Eminences. I merely seek to shed light by increasing knowledge through reason.
In other words, you seek to free man from the controlling darkness of ignorance, fear, and superstition.
Yes.
Are you trying to do us out of a job?
No. Priests have a living to earn, you know. We have commitments, responsibilities. I've got a family.
Shh.
You must recant, Galileo, or burn in hell.
I'm afraid I am too rational to share your vision of hell.
Fair enough. In that case, you haven't got a problem, have you? Obviously, if a great scientist like you says the everlasting agony of scorching fire doesn't exist, then that's an end to it.
All right, you bastards, I recant. God, I hate being a Catholic.
But the flame of rationalism was soon sweeping across the world. In Europe, scientific and philosophical texts were appearing.
And in the Middle East and in Asia, loads of history was happening. All the time, but frankly, who cares about them? Old orders were challenged. Liberty confronted oppression. Reform took on orthodoxy. And Spurs drew with Aston Villa at home.
Soon, Europe echoed to the sound of massacres and persecutions, which were brutal and bloody and very bad for tourism. Some dissenters sought liberty in new lands.
Gather round, brothers and sisters, and let us give thanks, for after many months of hardship aboard the Mayflower, the good Lord has delivered us safe into the liberty of this new land.
He sure has.
Why are you talking like that?
Talking like what?
In that strange drawling manner.
I don't rightly know. Oh, my God, I'm putting on weight. And look, my clothes are starting to clash.
This is the devil's work. Call Reverend Peters. He will cast out this demon. Reverend?
Yo, dude, what's going down?
Oh, my God. It's this place. It's cursed. Something in this land curdles men's tongues and sucks out their brains.
Brother, look on yonder ridge. Native Indians.
Quick, get the wagons in a circle. Why did I say that? We don't have any wagons.
We can head them off at the pass.
Sister, you also? Shucks. We're doomed. I'll sue.
From this new world were to come libertarian ideas that would influence the continent of Europe. In 1789, the French rose up in revolution so that French people could think, write, and speak freely. Just about the worst idea anyone has ever had.
But another new world was dawning, the world of factories and machines. Industrialization was giving rise to the working masses.
Foreman! Foreman!
Yes, Mr. Ormondroyd?
These people aren't working hard enough, lad. I know that for a fact. Just look at the state of this loom. There's not a single mangled limb in that machine. They're slacking, lad. Throw a couple of them in workhouse. Oh, and tell that Catherine Cookson woman to stop writing everything down.
I'm afraid I can't comply, Mr. Ormondroyd.
You will, lad. This is my factory.
Not anymore. The workers are taking over.
That's right. The means of production must belong to the proletariat.
And this will come about through an inevitable historical dialectic.
No, that's not right. It'll be through the violent overthrow of capitalist institutions.
You mean the use of terror against the elitist bourgeoisie?
I know what I mean, you militant gobshite.
Oh, yeah? I'll bloody cleanse you, you revisionist git.
No conflict, please.
Oh, shut up, you compromising bastard. And so the Brotherhood of International Socialism was born. It prospered in the great new cities that were springing up, and soon these cities were connected up by the marvel of the train.
In September 1830, the Liverpool to Manchester railway opened in a glorious blaze of triumph when the first train chugged out of Liverpool station and immediately ran over a politician.
The dead man's name was William Huskisson. He was an ex-cabinet minister. It was a big news story at the time. The modern equivalent would be, say, if David Meller had fallen under the wheels of the first Eurostar train. We'll just pause to give everyone time to finish a mental picture. Other...
Hold on. Don't rush the moment.
Other forms of transport were helping to shrink the world. And in North Carolina, in 1903, two brothers fulfilled man's oldest dream.
Yee-haw!
That's it, Orville. She's up. You're flying.
No. Go for it.
Yeah, that's it. We've done it.
We did it. How far did we fly, Wilbur?
I'm just measuring it. 38 yards.
Okay, 38 yards. I'll write that down in the logbook. And on this expense form?
12 miles. Okay, well, let's wheel this baby back and fly her again. Hey, hang on. We seem to have lost the luggage.
But man wasn't merely exploring the world around him. He was exploring the mysteries of his own identity. In Vienna, Sigmund Freud was making the extraordinary discovery that you could charge people money for just listening to them and going, every now and again.
And of course, Charles Darwin was changing man's perception of his own origins.
What are you working on, Charles?
I am cataloguing the dozens of different specimens of stuffed birds that I brought back from the Galapagos Islands, partly to study for my theory of evolution, but mostly to annoy my landlady.
I cannot accept this theory of yours, Charles, that we are somehow descendants from the apes. We're nothing like them. I've seen apes in a zoo, and they screech and spit and masturbate in front of strangers.
You've not been to Pontefract on a Saturday night.
In the years to come, man was to make more astonishing discoveries. That he was mostly a biological vehicle for his own genes. That the universe was expanding at an astonishing rate. And that single-cell life forms could mate with themselves and, in some cases, get jobs presenting the girly show.
And as the new millennium approaches, what other great revelations await mankind? What exciting new avenues of thought, and in wonder and poetic beauty, will any of them be able to rival the concept of David Meller in that train? Well, that's all we've time for. We've left many questions unanswered about the millennium.
And what will life be like when the next millennium comes round? Will we be able to experience cyber sex by downloading our genitalia onto someone else's laptop?
Will space travel be commonplace? Will there be human colonies on distant planets? Will Eurostar have gone into profit yet?
And perhaps most fascinating of all, if, as some scientists predict, mankind evolves into a small, highly intelligent ball of pure energy, how will we eat soup?
Good night.
Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacob. The producer was Paul Mayhew Archer.